All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Any Three Things podcast. I've got with me today, once again, my wonderful recurring companion, Michael Barclay, coordinator of religious education.
And other things.
Among other things. Yep. Your role recently expanded, didn't it?
It did, yeah. So I do youth ministry for St. Bridget and St. Paul as well.
Wow. So you're driving out there later this morning, right?
Yeah, I'm going out to St. Bridget right after this to hang out at recess. So it's pretty cool because I get to do, like, in the school as well as youth ministry things. Mm-hmm. And so it's, like, easy to recruit people because they have to sit there and listen to me for, like, 45 minutes during class time, which is great.
So. It makes sense to incorporate youth ministry in school a little bit, I think. And so that's good. Glad you got that new opportunity, though. I'm sure it's more miles, more responsibility.
Yeah, it's more things. It's like, how do I do everything I already did more efficiently?
Yeah, efficiency is really important, and it's one of the key hallmarks of what we're trying to do with Beacons of Light in a lot of ways. It's like, okay, instead of duplicating efforts, instead of all these other things, let's do stuff well. But in the spirit of the opposite of that, let's duplicate things and do more. I decided recently to offer a series of Advent talks, and we already have a decent number of adult education stuff going on, but it's just something kind of the Lord put on my heart directly. I'm like, I'm doing all of these classes to study and get smarter and know more things, and it would be a waste of all of that effort if I didn't share it with the people of God, and especially since we can do a couple talks with basically no effort. Virginia Keeper, another one of our staff members up at Sacred Heart, did put in a little bit of effort and had a nice set of snacks. She didn't get the pre-sliced cheese. She bought block cheese and sliced it herself. Like, just a beautiful expression of effort and love for the. But at any rate,
the sliced cheese was good. I liked it.
Yeah, it was a little mild cheddar from Meyer, as she said. But just the love going into it of slicing it herself. In similar sort of way, like, even though in a certain sense you could say, oh, well, we offer a Tuesday morning Bible study video series at Mary Help, offer Wednesday morning at Sacred Heart. That's enough. The people should be happy. That's enough education to keep the parishioners happy. I just kind of felt, you know what, I should do a little bit of extra stuff. And so three talks on the three comings of Christ. Yesterday, Sunday, December 3rd, talked about the second coming of Christ, which is the final of those three comings. It's kind of funny because we talk about it, the second coming, but there's a middle coming there that we don't talk about. We'll talk about that one next week. Talked about the second coming of Christ, the end of the world, what we need to know as Christians. And then next week, going to be talking about Sunday, December 10th, that is, talking about the coming of Christ in the Eucharist, in grace, in our hearts, during our life of this, our journey through this valley of tears. And then the final Sunday in this series, Sunday, December 17th, also the third Sunday of Advent, be at it again, talking about the first coming of Christ in his infancy, the incarnation, the nativity. And when you think about, so, you know, it's just a couple talks, easy, very low-key kind of thing, just talk for 20, 30 minutes, have some time for questions, have some time for fellowship. It's about as bare bones and basic as adult education can be. But thinking from that more broadly, okay, so we're doing this one particular thing. Let's think about, what's the purpose of adult faith formation in the parish? Why do we need to do this? And how do we set this up, right? So, since this is part of your job, and you have many thoughts on this, I guess, why do you think that, like, shouldn't just, like, coming to Mass and praying and maybe reading on your own time as a Catholic be enough? Why does the parish need to do adult faith formation events?
So, I was recently asked, like, we got picked to do, have an article in the Catholic Telegraph in January about, like, our parish, because apparently we're just, like, killing the game, which is pretty cool.
That's right. We are among the families of parishes in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. We're in that, like, upper echelon of just knocking it out of the park.
It's true.
Which I have to give a huge shout out of gratitude to all of our parishioners, all of our staff, for, because that doesn't happen just because the priest wanted to happen. A priest says something happens, and then, like, sometimes it happens, right? it depends on the people who make up the parishes, the parishioners, the staff, to really get us to the point where we are. And so I'm really, really grateful. But anyway, so we're knocking out of the park. The Catholic Telegraph wants to do a spotlight on us because we're so special.
Yeah, yep. And so one of the questions that they, like, sent over to me to answer was, like, so, like, what are your responsibilities? And I kind of chuckled. So, like, what aren't my responsibilities? And Father Beadle, we had the big, like, a huge staff retreat day update service thing a few months ago up at Sacred Heart, and Father Beadle talked about from the canon, which is super cool to read. Sometimes I just read it because I think it's really fun.
Canon law is, if you're a nerd, and even if you're like not even a nerd, you're kind of nerd-leaning, or you just like order, canon law is fantastic.
Yeah, it's
really interesting.
It's a lot of fun.
So reading canon law on the responsibilities of a pastor, if I remember correctly.
Yes, exactly. And like how that responsibility is given out to everyone else. Well, not everyone else, but Father Beadle chooses certain people to give that out to. So like the other vicars and then people on staff and then all the way down to the lay people to go out to evangelize everybody in our parishes. And I think it's important for the church to do something for that, like to have gatherings, because I have lots of thoughts on this. Well, because I think not everything is appropriate to do inside the context of the liturgy. Like, I just don't think that makes sense to do everything. Mm-hmm. And if we just try to make, like, homilies, oh, why don't you just say all these things during your homily? It's like, well, because then you wouldn't understand and it wouldn't really be true about what a homily is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, what is the liturgy meant to be?
And I 100% agree. A homily is not just a brief aside from the Mass where the priest gets to do a little bit of teaching. The homily, according to Second Vatican Council, is an integral part of the liturgy, which is not to say that it's a necessary part of the liturgy. You do not actually have to preach at every Mass. There's sometimes on I'll frequently have the 8 a.m. Mass at St. Bridget before I get to class at 9 a.m. at UD, which is a tight window. And so on some of those, I don't preach. And that's fine. You're actually allowed to not preach in the Mass. But when you do preach, your preaching needs to be entirely consistent of one whole part, that is to say, integral with the rest of the Mass. And that means the homily is supposed to light people's hearts on fire with love and desire to receive Jesus Christ in the Eucharist and to share in his sacrifice on behalf of the salvation of the world. Right? Like, that's what the homily is for. It's not for teaching. It includes teaching, but that teaching is ordered towards conforming us to the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross that is being represented in the Mass. And so you can only do certain kinds of teaching. You can only do so much teaching, right? If I were, like, last night when I was giving my faith formation talk, that was like 30, 35 minutes of a lot of information, a lot of scripture references, quoting from various different popes and the fathers of the church, right? If I tried to give that sort of talk during a homily, people would get up and walk away because it would be so long.
Yeah, that is, yeah. I don't know if people would leave. It was a good talk. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
I took like a whole page of notes.
Yeah. So because we can't do enough in the homily, and that's not really what it's for, we need to offer something else. And also people, like, it's not good to learn alone.
Yeah.
Right? It's not good. Like, there's a ton of people, especially in our internet day and age. It's like, oh, I can just go online and read a bunch of articles from various different people, and that's how I'm going to be educated about my faith. But it is dangerous to go alone.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. Especially in, like, matters of the faith, because it's one thing to learn about, like, to go on Khan Academy and, like, learn some math, because, like, you know, math is, like, pretty easy to know if you got it wrong. But for, like, especially things of the faith, like, through my travels, you see a lot of people who try to do that, whether that's just because they have a lack of, like, mentorship or, like, pastoring, and then they just get scattered, or maybe it's they just don't have the background to be able to interpret it well. And that's the coolest part. The coolest part about being Catholic is Eucharist. But one of the coolest parts about being Catholic is the magisterium. So I don't have to figure it all out. I can just read it and be like, wow, this is really confusing. And then go and like be like, hey, church, tell me what this means. It's awesome.
It's good. Yeah, so the magisterium refers to the teaching authority of the church. And it's the authority of the bishops in union with the Pope throughout time, throughout history, to... because Jesus said to his apostles, behold, I'm with you always to the end of the age, and I will give you the Spirit of truth, and he will guide you to all truth, right? That the bishops in union with the Pope and all of the lay people gathered together with them will not pervert the true faith, right? We have our faith in the church to keep us true to the teaching of Jesus Christ and the gospel is not that all of the people in the church are going to do the right thing all of the time, because they're not. Rather, it's a specific faith in God himself to keep us true. And so that even if, you know, some comment by a bishop somewhere is off, right? Or that some priest says something wrong in his homily somewhere around the world, which happens all of the time. And sometimes on purpose, sometimes not on purpose. That God is going to keep the whole church faithful to him, and especially through the official teachings and pronouncements of the bishops united with the Pope. And this is a communal thing, too. We're supposed to help each other, right? Like, just me figuring it out with Jesus is not the way of the Catholic Church in learning and keeping the true faith, that we're supposed to... God gives each of us individually graces of drawing close to him, of learning to be close to him, and that those are not just for us. They're for the whole body of the church, and then especially the authority and the education that priests, that theologians get, is not just for them to be smart. It's so that the whole church as a body can be smarter and closer to our Lord. And so, yeah, we have those faith formation nights, those events, because we're not meant to do this on our own. We're not just... We can't just get it all done in a homily. We want to encourage the life of learning, the understanding of the church as a community here among our parishes. And so individual people, like someone comes to my talk last night, they probably already knew a bunch of that. Some people probably didn't know much of it, right? Yeah. Everyone in our whole community as a family of parishes is smarter because we have these kinds of events.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's definitely true that we're not meant to do it alone. And when you get together, like, have people in communion to learn, like, just more fun, too. Like, it's more enjoyable. Like, there's a good atmosphere. And if God wanted us to be alone, he would only made one person.
Yeah. No, he did not.
Yeah.
He at least started with two.
Yep.
We've had a lot more since then. So there's a bunch of stuff that we do in terms of faith formation. And I think Advent's a good time for it. We're getting ready for the coming of Christ. We're supposed to be allowing our hearts to be converted and turning towards the Lord. And so one of those things about events, too, you mentioned it's more fun. I think that sense of, yeah, the Catholic life is full. It's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be a boring slog. Yeah. We also have some parties and some celebrations in this time of the year. And so we also had that yesterday for our religious education students here at Mary Help of Christians. They had a special party, didn't they?
They did. We had our St. Nicholas feast day party.
Yeah, which, of course, the feast day of St. Nicholas is this upcoming Wednesday.
Yep.
But we anticipated it a little bit on Sunday. We're doing it again at Sacred Heart this weekend, right?
Next weekend. We had to move it.
Oh, okay, got it. Yep. But it will still take place. Yes. We will still the kids will still get presents, which is important.
Yep.
And so what was that like? Was it fun?
It was a lot of fun. And I think it was cool because for St. Nicholas, I came in thinking, because the catechists do all the hard work. The catechists, like, just put everything together and they get everything set up. And our maintenance people, like Eric and Eli, put up all the tables and do all the things. And I had to come in on Saturday and put some papers on tables. And so, like, it was very, very easy.
Shout out to our volunteers and staff members, again.
They're awesome. And then the Knights cooked breakfast for us for free, which was really cool, and they just love supporting the kids. I was talking to one of our Knights who goes by the title Beefy. He's awesome. And he was saying that I was like, well, like, hey, thanks for doing this. He's like, hey, anything I can do to help give the kids a positive, like, memory with the church. And I think a lot of the events that we do like that are really just trying to, like, show the kids that what the culture tries to tell you about what the Catholic Church is just very wrong. Like, it's just very wrong. It's not true at all.
Yeah, the church is this mean thing that they're going to tell you what to do and you're not allowed to have fun. And, like, no.
Yeah.
No, we're going to not just... Like, we're going to have a good and beautiful time that's not just earthly pleasure, that's not just, you know... Right? Like, there's all kinds of fun that kids might try to get up to. There are good kinds and there's bad kinds. Like, actually, you should not desire some of those kinds of fun.
Yep, that's definitely
true. And to help inculcate that, like, hey, we should desire only the good things. Like St. Paul says in his letter to the Philippians, probably, I don't know, it's in one of his letters. I'm pretty sure it's Philippians, actually. Like, whatever's good, whatever's holy, whatever's true, whatever's good, think of those things. Desire only the best kinds of fun that are going to lift you up, that are going to really fill you with God's joy and goodness in the spirit. Don't focus on the kinds of diversions. It's interesting, the word for fun in Spanish is divertido. Something is fun if it's a diversion. It kind of diverts you from what you're really supposed to be doing.
Interesting.
Which, you know, you can also argue about what that really means in Spanish. It's just kind of interesting to me as an English speaker, because I don't want the kind of fun that's a diversion from who I'm supposed to be. I want my delight and my joy to line up with who I'm supposed to be, to be part of to fulfill the deep longing and desire for goodness in my heart, right? And St. Nicholas, a bishop who was just renowned for his charity, there was a story of a father who had three daughters, and he was poor. He lost his ability to work, and he was his landlord was threatening to sell his daughters into slavery if he wasn't able to pay back his debts. And the father was overwhelmed with shame because he couldn't care for his family. He wasn't willing to accept charity. And so, knowing that he wouldn't take the charity directly, St. Nicholas snuck in and left money for them in some versions of the stories in their stockings, right? Yeah. Which is where, of course, we get the tradition. And like this charity that not just gives... Right, it's not just that he gave to the poor. Plenty of people give to the poor. He gave to the poor in the way that the poor could receive it, out of this deep concern for the honor of this man who is trying so hard to take care of his daughters. Right, like that kind of generosity and goodness. Right, that joy that then the family that benefited from St. Nicholas's charity received. Right, that kind of goodness is what we're aiming for. To like, hey, in the Catholic Church, there's a kind of joy and goodness and fulfillment and peace that the world can't give. And that this is what's worth striving for and living for. And it's like, hey, we have a silly party during Advent. But we're celebrating that gift of goodness that truly fulfills the longings of our hearts at the deepest levels.
Yeah, and I think it's a good, like, I think it's a great time to talk about, like, Santa versus St. Nicholas.
Yeah.
Like, my parents lied to me when I was a child and told me Santa was real. And I know there's a lot of like people.
That's a strong saying. Does your dad listen to this podcast?
I hope he does. I'll share it with him. I'm not going to tell my kids that Santa's real. Hopefully. I mean, I'm pretty sure Geneva's down for that.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out indeed. Because I think it's like, I think there's a more beautiful opportunity where, I mean, like one of the things, like the kids don't get that the Knights of Columbus spend all morning preparing and the catechists are there for two or 3 hours on Friday, setting everything up. And printing off the coloring pages and buying the cookies and getting the icing and, like, getting all the things ready for them. Like, if you can show them that, I think it's important to do that because they have a greater sense of, like, gratitude, which is, like, just a good remedy for a lot of things in life.
Yeah.
And so if you're like, oh, Santa got you these gifts versus, oh, I got you these gifts, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, we can honor, like, the reason I'm getting you these gifts for Christmas is because the greatest gift ever, like, that could possibly be, like, an... As my nerd friend Stephen Barrett says, who's a good math guy, he's a genius, he says, like an undefined amount better, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's infinite. It's undefined. You can't have a better gift. And so, like, we get you these tiny little gifts to show you that versus, oh, Santa does. Because yeah. I think the culture is, there might have been a time where, maybe my parents' time, where that was, like, more associated with being a Christian or a Catholic. But now it's just so remarkably secularized that I don't think it's a good distinction, which is a hot take. And I'm sure that would get me in a lot of trouble if I went into like RE at Sacred Heart and told all their kids Santa wasn't real, which I'm not planning on doing.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm not their parent and I respect their parents' decisions.
Yeah, it's funny though. So the way my parents explained it is when we were older and we saw through, you know, the Wizard of Oz moment where like you looked behind the curtain and it's like, oh, okay, that was mom and dad.
Yep.
Right. I have this memory of figuring it out with my cousin. Like, oh, I saw that present in my mom's trunk before Christmas. Right.
Yep.
The way mom and dad explained that was that the generosity of St. Nicholas would inspire them to give, right? Like, so they're carrying on the spirit and work of that generosity of St. Nicholas. And so in a sense, it really is that holiness, that generosity that's demonstrated in the saints that continues to give to the world. I don't know that I bought that, but it was a better explanation than a lot of the other ones that I've heard. And I think it's certainly true that we desire to be taught by the examples of the saints. And so that carrying on the generosity of St. Nicholas is a much better explanation than, oh, there's this kind of mystical character. And then later on, you learn that religion is a fake, right? Like, that's not the narrative that we want to give to our kids. Rather, it's that the deepest truth is that all of this charity, all of this giving comes from God. Like you said, it's all in reference back to Jesus Christ, who is the greatest gift that the Father gives us, which is really his own life through his Son. Jesus says in John chapter 6 that just as I have life from my Father, whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood lives in me and I in him. Right? In the same way that Jesus and the Father and the Holy Spirit share life and give life to each other in the Trinity, that we are given life through the body of Jesus Christ that's given to us at Christmas, which we receive in the Eucharist.
Which is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. It's great. So speaking of that it comes at Christmas, and we're not in Christmas yet, we're in Advent, but we already do kind of celebrate something. Like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Should we have Christmas parties before Christmas?
So, One of the traditions that we have in my family is we don't decorate for Christmas at all until New Year's Eve. Mm. Or not New Year's Eve, that'd be really weird. Until Christmas Eve.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, it makes way more sense. And so, like, we get back from Christmas Eve Mass. Like, we usually, wherever we go, we get back from Christmas Eve Mass. And we'll usually have the tree already. But sometimes we do that on Christmas Eve as well, which you get really good deals.
That's right. Yeah. Everyone's trying to get rid of
them. Yeah, so we usually go and get, like a Charlie Brown tree that's a little taller than 2 feet. And just, like, slap it up. And usually, like, I'm no kidding, you get some pretty good deals if you go around Christmas Eve. And so we, like, have our tree sometimes, and then, like, we throw up all the ornaments, all the nativity sets, the whole shebang, mm-hmm. and get it all ready, which is, like, cool, because, like, as a kid, it was really annoying, because you're, like, really tired, and you just got back from Christmas Eve Mass, and, like, you want to go to bed and wake up, so Santa's there.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
And now, as an adult, like, to see the explosion of light, and, like, literally light from the lights on the Christmas tree, and, like, the garland, and, like, the just the celebration atmosphere, just the whole atmosphere of the house changes, which I think is a much better representation than, oh, just kind of like setting things up as it goes along. Like for me personally, I'm a very like kind of on and off switch kind of person. Like if I'm going to commit something, I really want to commit to it. And I could see how like doing, like setting up little things along like the course of Advent to kind of have a more gradual build is also good. I think Advent, like I asked Father Rose right before the podcast, I'm like, Advent's like a penitential season, right? Like, yep. So it's important to do something for that. I know my fiance's family doesn't do sweets during Advent, which I think is really good.
You get plenty during Christmas.
Yeah, you get a lot. So it's a good thing to cut down a little bit beforehand.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you gotta save up your calories during Advent so that you can eat them during Christmas.
Fair enough. And I think it's in my own prayer life that I hope like extends into the way that I do things, it's how do I create space? Like think about Mary's womb. Like how do I, like Mary, create space in my heart for Jesus to come? And so how do I be intentional about creating extra silence? How do I be intentional about doing less things to be less cluttered and less busy, which is difficult. It's very difficult.
And so to kind of carry that out and live that out, our religious ed Christmas party at Sacred Heart isn't actually until after Christmas at the Feast of the Epiphany, which is, of course, when the wise men came and gave gold, frankincense, and myrrh to the infant Jesus. And that's also another place, that's another point in our tradition where the practice of giving Christmas presents comes from. Like, Jesus got presents from the wise men, and so we give presents in commemoration of them. That's also the day, I believe, in a lot of Hispanic cultures where they do the gift giving, and you've got the three kings cake, right, for the three wise men. Anyway, so I think there is, we don't totally control our schedules, right? If I am at the University of Dayton for my doctorate, and the University of Dayton graduate student Christmas party is Thursday, December 14th, right? And I just don't control that.
Yeah.
I show up when the party is. And it's okay. It's not as if it's a, oh, we can't celebrate at all until Christmas or else we broke the rule. Yeah. It's fine. Even during Lent, every Sunday is a celebration of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, right? And so Jesus has already come. He was already born over 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem. Jesus has already suffered and died for us. We've already won the victory. He tells us in John's gospel, even before he suffers and dies, he tells his apostles, don't be afraid, I've conquered the world, right? So we can already celebrate some, and it's okay to anticipate it a little bit, but we do need intentional penance and prayer and silence to get ready, to get our hearts converted and ready to continually keep Jesus Christ present with us year round. And so that's critically important. We can't get rid of that. And if we've done those things to make Advent intentionally more prayerful, a little penitential, then, okay, fine, my department Christmas party is before December 25th. That's fine. I can go to that party and not disturb Christ in my heart.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if you've been faithful to, like, whatever your Advent devotion or penance is, then you'll have a more readily openness and maybe ability to discern the Spirit to evangelize at those places.
Yeah.
And just have fun. Like, it's okay to have fun during Advent. It's okay to have fun during Lent. Like, it's permitted.
No, you must be sad for this whole month. Otherwise, Jesus doesn't come. No, that's not how this works. Yeah. It's not like Santa Claus giving us coal instead of Jesus if we haven't prayed enough during Advent. That's not how this works. Instead, Jesus is going to come no matter what. That's the first part of Advent, is the recognition that Jesus Christ is going to come at the end of the world, whether we like it or not. Yeah. And so it's not that he needs to do something to get ready, or if we don't do it right, he's not going to come. If we don't get ready, he's going to come and we're going to miss out.
Yeah.
And so it's about the love that we have for Jesus Christ, that expectant longing for his coming that we nourish in our souls through prayer, through a little bit of penance, through giving to the poor. Right? I said in my homily this past weekend, if you want to get the presents ready under the tree for baby Jesus, go give them to the poor. How do you give to Jesus right now? You give to the poor. He says, whatever you do to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you do it to me. And so that's another beautiful way to get ready for Jesus' coming, to have presents ready for him. So that's Advent. Yep. We're adventing. Are you adventing hard?
Yeah, decently.
That's good. Yep. We should.
Like 2 days in, so.
Yeah, right. It's only literally the second day of Advent right now. I encourage all of you to keep that attitude of expectant longing in your prayer. Pay attention for our faith formation opportunities throughout Advent. Like I said, I've got another 2 talks this upcoming Sunday and the following. This Sunday, December 10th, 4:30, Mary Help of Christians in our parish center. And then the last one, Sunday, December 17th, 4:30 at Sacred Heart in their parish center, our parish center. It's all ours. Whatever. I say there because I'm currently sitting at Mary Help of Christians, not because Sacred Heart are not my people, just to briefly clarify that. Someone at Sacred Heart is going to be like, that's not the truth. They're lovely people. And continue to pray for our religious education. It's so important. Right, like, and I think we do when we're talking about Santa Claus. We're talking about lying to your kids, right? We're exaggerating a little bit for the sake of sparking conversation on a podcast. It is so important to communicate that life, that love, that mystery, that joy to our kids, right? It's not, like, Catholicism is not boring all of the time. We want joy and happiness. And so putting in that work for our religious education students, for ourselves during this time of Advent, is absolutely worth it.
Yep, totally agree.
So, all right. Happy period of penitential preparation for the coming of our Lord. Thank you all so much for listening. Thanks for praying. Michael, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Absolutely.
Have fun with the kids at St. Bridget.
Will do. Will do. I'll probably lose basketball badly.
Come on.
So, yeah, I know.
It's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Do your best.
Will do.
All right, awesome. Thank you all for listening. Have a blessed day.